Penguin Random House Audio presents The Truth According to Us by Annie Barrows. Read for you by Anne-Marie Lee, Tara Sands, and Julia Whalen. With Cassandra Campbell, Danny Campbell, Mark Deakins, Kimberly Farr, Kirby Hayborn, Lincoln Hoppe, Paul Michael, Linda Montana, and Arthur Morey. Chapter 1.
In 1938, the year I was 12, my hometown of Macedonia, West Virginia, celebrated its sesquicentennial, a word I thought had to do with fruit for the longest time. In school, we commemorated the occasion as we commemorated most occasions, with tableaus, one for each of the major events in Macedonia's history. There weren't many, hardly enough to stretch out across 8 grades, but the teachers eked them out the best they could. If it hadn't been for the war between the states, I don't know what they would have done. When Virginia seceded from the Union, Western Virginia got mad and seceded right back into it. All except 4 little counties, one of them ours, that stuck out their tongues at West Virginia and declared themselves part of the Confederacy, a piece of sass with long consequences in the way of road paving and school desks. Tucked up in a crook between the Potomac and the Shenandoah, Macedonia was a junction for generals and railroads alike, and by the time Lee hung up his sword at Appomattox, the town had changed hands 47 times, 6 of them in one day. Art teachers dearly loved to get up a scene of the townspeople stuffing their Confederate flags up the chimney as the Union troops marched in and yanking them back down again as the troops departed. The 4th, 5th, and 6th graders got the war scenes, and the 7th and 8th graders got the short end of the stick, because not a thing happened in Macedonia after 1865, except the roundhouse blowing up and the American Everlasting Hosiery Company opening its doors. Half the town worked in that mill, and the other half wished it did. But there was not much about the American Everlasting Hosiery Company that looked good in a tableau. Sometimes, the teachers gave up and killed 2 birds with 1 stone by making the 7th graders march across the stage, waving socks, while the 8th graders sang the Star-Spangled Banner behind them. In 1938, though, the 8th grade hit pay dirt, because Mrs. Roosevelt drove through town. She stopped at the square, took a drink from our sulfur spring water fountain, made a face, and drove away. That was plenty for a tableau, except that instead of making a face, the 8th grade Mrs. Roosevelt said, "The people of Macedonia are lucky to receive the benefits of healthful mineral water." My sister Bert and I laughed so hard, we got sent into the hall. Once the curtain had clunked down on our tableaus, and we'd been herded back into our classrooms, I supposed that Macedonia's sesquicentennial festivities were concluded. Hadn't we just covered 150 years of history in 23 minutes flat? We had. But not a week later came the Decoration Day Parade, and that, I realized later, was the real beginning of the sesquicentennial. Later still, I realized that everything began that day. Everything that was to heave itself free of its foundations over the course of the summer began to rattle lightly on the morning of the parade. That was when I first heard of Layla Beck, when I began to wonder about my father, and when I noticed I was being lied to and decided to leave my childhood behind. I have since wondered, of course, how my life, and my father's and my Aunt Jotty's, too, would have been different if I'd decided to stay at home that morning. This is what's called the enigma of history, and it can drive you out of your mind if you let it. Jotty and I were packed tight on the sidewalk, together with everyone else in town, to watch the parade. Usually it wasn't much. The Decoration Day Parade, just a matter of assorted veterans looking grim and the high school marching band. But this year, in honor of the sesquicentennial, we'd been promised an extra fancy show, a real spectacle. And that was what we got.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?